Sean, this is the NHL At The Rink Stadium Series podcast, if you will. And I'm excited. These games coming up Saturday and Sunday, Flyers, Devils, Rangers, Islanders at MetLife Stadium. They're in our backyard. We get to show off a little bit, well, where we live and where we're from, or at least where I'm from, and where you are now adopted to be from, I guess. What do you think? You excited?
I live here, Dan. I'm not from here. I make that clear, even though I've lived more of my life in Jersey now than I have in New England. But it's going to be awesome. Like, it's going to be fantastic. You know, we talked to Peter Laviolette a little bit later in this episode, the New York Rangers coach, and one of the things he talked about was the opportunities to do things like this and to share it with your family and stuff like that. And it's not the first time that I'm going to get to share it with my family, but I'm playing hooky on Saturday, and I'm going to the game as a fan. You got to do it every once in a while. My son's flying in from Florida. Daughter and wife are coming. We're meeting, you know, 10 or 15 people. Big tailgate like it's a football game. It's going to be fantastic. And then back to work for that big tilt between the Rangers and the Islanders on Sunday.
My son and two of his buddies are going to the Rangers-Islanders game. I'm bringing them. I'm working both games, not playing hooky, but I'm working both games. And but I'll be with them a little bit before. We'll go to the fanfare and do all of that stuff. And as you mentioned, Peter Laviolette from the New York Rangers, their coach, he joined us that interview soon. And also Andre Palat from the New Jersey Devils. And we'll have that one a little bit later as well. But even with the outdoor game stuff going on, Sean, and it's a nice diversion from, you know, the daily grind, if you will, of the NHL season, which I love, which we love, which is why we do this. But the trade deadline is a hot button topic. It will be through March 8th, which is the deadline. And the Calgary Flames, I just saw them, right? Monday night at Madison Square Garden. They've already traded Elias Lindholm. They have Chris Tanev. They have Noah Hanifin, maybe Jacob Markstrom. And to be honest, I look at the Calgary Flames, I look at the trade deadline, and I'm like, the Flames are in control. They're in the driver's seat, Sean. They control the trade deadline right now. It's a defense market. Christopher Tanev, they're waiting for a first-round pick. Noah Hanifin has an 8-year deal reportedly on the table to sign with the Flames. He hasn't signed it yet. To me, that means he's not going to sign it, right? I mean, if you don't know right away, that means you know, okay? And I think the writing's on the wall there. They're in control of this. And if a team like the New Jersey Devils, who we'll see on Saturday night against the Philadelphia Flyers at MetLife Stadium, if they're in the market for a goalie, well, they're going to have to pay up to get Jacob Markstrom. He's still signed 2 more years, $6 million per. The Flames are in control of this entire deadline right now.
Yeah, until somebody else comes in and steals their thunder, right? Like, to me, that's the beauty of the deadline is, yeah, you could say that Calgary has the major pieces, that you look at the unrestricteds and say, oh, yeah, that's the cream of the crop. They're going to get the biggest haul. But then somebody else decides that they're going to be a seller that maybe you don't think is going to be, or somebody's going to try and do it on the fly like Nashville did the other year. You know, and all of a sudden there's pieces out there that you don't know about. And that's, to me, that's the greatest part of what's going to be the next 3.5 weeks is the fact that it's going to change daily. And there's a ton of interest in those players, and they're going to help anybody. They're going to help. They could help a couple of teams that are going to be playing in this stadium series, right? We know that the Flyers aren't in the market to deal. Danny Briere has already said that. Maybe he moves some pieces out. Maybe he stands pat. I don't know. He has some pieces that are certainly of interest. Defensemen, as you mentioned. The Devils, you know, and the Islanders are right on the cusp of the race in the East. Point separating them, you know, we'll see by the time we get through Saturday where each team is. So they could be in the market to be looking to bring in some pieces. I wonder if New Jersey is. I wonder if they're going to do something again this year. They made a huge splash last year with Timo Meier. And, you know, how many times do you do that? How many times do you move assets to make a run before it comes back to haunt you in your long-term development?
Well, you have a hungry GM. You have a hungry ownership group, a hungry team, young team that wants to win, got a taste of it last year, you know, reached the second round of the playoffs. And everybody last year about the Devils was talking about the idea that, you know what, they were ahead of schedule, right? Well, this year they should be on schedule, and they haven't been that good. They've won a couple of games here, and a big problem for them is goaltending, as everybody says. I think it's a little bit more defense as well. How great would Noah Hanifin and Jacob Markstrom look in New Jersey Devils uniforms right now? And what would that cost, right? That's something that I would have to think Tom Fitzgerald, their general manager, is trying to explore right now, because those are their needs. It's just a matter of, what can you give up? What do you give up to get that? That's a blockbuster, right? That's a massive trade. And if you get a guy like Hanifin, well, don't you think you got to sign him? you're giving up big pieces to get a guy like Noah Hanifin, don't you think you want to sign him? And there's been reports that he wants to play in the U.S. He's a Boston guy. He wants to play, you know, could be on the East Coast. And to me, I don't know if you agree with me, Sean, but if there's been an 8-year deal on the table, as reports indicate, for Noah Hanifin from the Calgary Flames, and that deal is not signed yet, to me, that tells me that Noah Hanifin is not interested in signing with the Calgary Flames. And then the writing's on the wall, and Craig Conroy's got to act. And like you said, some other team could come in and steal their thunder. They got to act soon here, but you also have to weigh that balance of making sure you get the best trade you can get. Hanifin and Markstrom in New Jersey could be really interesting.
I think it's more defense than it is goaltending, and I know Devil fans don't want to hear that. They are so sour on the Devils goaltenders at this point, especially Vanacek. But I would like to see what they could do if their defense was intact.
That's why we talk about Markstrom and Hanifin. Maybe we should only really be talking about Hanifin. It's going to cost you a lot less, right? And then maybe you address the goaltending issue if it remains an issue in the offseason. They are a very interesting team. We'll see them Saturday night against the Flyers at MetLife Stadium. Sean, I think that the Devils are going to be in the mix here at the trade deadline. And another team, before we get to our interview with Peter Laviolette from the New York Rangers, their coach, one other team in the Metropolitan Division that probably should be in the mix in the trade deadline too is the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I don't see it, Sean. I know they have a great coach. And they have Sidney Crosby. And for those two reasons, you never want to count them out. And I understand that. They're 7 points out. They have games in hand. But where are they going? Do they look like a team to you that can make a run? They've gone 10 straight games entering tonight against Florida. 10 straight games scoring 2 goals or less. They're averaging 2.3 goals per game in their last 10 games. Now, they're only giving up 2.4. So the defense has been good, which is why they're 3-4-3, which is why they picked up 9 out of a possible 20 points in those games. But they have Jake Guentzel. Jake Guentzel could be a wanted commodity by a lot of teams. Are they going to sign Jake Guentzel to a 7 or 8 year deal? Is that where the Pittsburgh Penguins want to go right now? Or is this the opportunity here for them to make their first big move? Trade a Jake Guentzel, get picks, prospects, whatever it is that you'll get in return. I would think that the going market for a Jake Guentzel to a team, say, like the Edmonton Oilers would be pretty high right now. And you trade them, you get what you can get in return. Maybe you get a first round pick, maybe you get some good prospects, and you retool it around a little bit, because you're not trading Crosby, you're not trading Malkin, you're not trading Letang. But Guentzel, do you want to re-sign him? To me, they look like a team that's just stuck in the mud right now. And they're not going offensively. And I think it's time that they really took a hard look in the mirror for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Do any of those picks or prospects show up while Crosby's there?
Yeah, I don't know.
The answer is right. No, and then you don't do it.
But then you're just stuck in the mud for longer. Do you know what I mean? The run has been incredible with Crosby and Malkin and Letang. And I mean, a couple of years ago when they signed Malkin and Letang, I remember we talked about it. I said, I don't think they should sign them both. Ron Hextall was the GM at the time, and I didn't think they should do it. I thought that was the moment. That was the time that they should really readjust it. You can't keep trying to build your team around a legend in Crosby when his time is limited too. He's great. I mean, believe me, listen, he could play for a long time here, right? But how long are you going to go in that direction? You just keep stuck in the mud. They didn't make the playoffs last year. They don't look like a playoff team this year. They signed Jake Guentzel. Does that make them better? Does that make them a playoff team next year? I don't see it.
You go as long as they go. It's a championship tax. That's what it is.
Okay.
You pay for your titles. Every team's done it. Every team's done it. At some point, you owe the players that have delivered for you, that are of the stature of a Crosby and a Malkin, some loyalty. And you don't hang them out to dry and say, you know what, I know you only got 3 years left. Play out the string with a bunch of young kids. Here we go. I'm trading everything. I'm ripping this down to the studs. I'm going to bring in the whole new wave. We're going to be good again in 10 years. Hope you enjoy it while you're sitting on your recliner in Nova Scotia. Thanks for the memories.
Listen, I think the loyalty is when they signed him. That was the show of loyalty, right? But they have to build. They have to do what they have to do around them too. So it's a tough task. It really is. But you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, Sean, right now. They do not have a first-round pick this year. They do not have a third-round pick. They do not have a fifth-round pick. they're not a playoff team, or they don't look like one right now. So something has to give. And are you going to then give a 29, 30-year-old Jake Guentzel a 7-year deal, a 6-year deal, an 8-year deal? He's making $6 million per now. Are you going to give him $8 million? Is that making you any better? I don't see it. I don't think it's the way they should go. But it is, like you said, if they're going to pay a championship tax, then that's what they're going to have to do. And I disagree with that. I don't think you have to do that.
At some point, I just think there's something bigger, right? Like, I understand all the economics. I understand all the development. I think there's certain players in this league that are owed things. I think Patrice Bergeron was owed things. I think that Alex Ovechkin was owed things. They've done things for their franchise that you can never put money on. Sidney Crosby changed the whole fortunes of the Pittsburgh Penguins. You can never, ever put a price on that. Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews in Chicago, you can never put a price on that. Look where their team is now. Are you okay with it if you're a fan? No, you hate it. Are you okay with it because you have three championships that you can think about and that you can reminisce about and that nobody else has? You'll live with it.
Well, maybe you'll live with it if you're Pittsburgh because you got those championships, and you know, and you'd still have Crosby and Malkin and Letang, and those guys would be guiding your future, if you will. So, listen, there's a lot of different ways to go. I think they're going to be in the mix. I think they should be. I think Guentzel should be in play. The Devils certainly will be. The Rangers are going to be in the mix as well. They've got some needs. We did not discuss those specific needs with Peter Laviolette, but we talked about a whole heck of a lot of other things, from their team to their goalies to just being in an outdoor game coming up on Sunday against the New York Islanders. Here's that interview with Peter Laviolette. Peter, thanks so much for jumping on with us. So things have been going well for you guys. You got a big outdoor game coming up, but just, you know, 5 wins in a row, feeling good. The group is feeling good. What do you like about this stretch for your team right now?
I think we've limited some defensive mistakes, and I think that always plays into it. I mean, if you play good defense and you think your team can score goals and you should win some hockey games. And I think through the course of the month of January, we're just giving up a little bit too much. We're, you know, leaving too much on the plate for our goaltenders, and we needed to tighten things up. And there were some games I thought we played pretty good in January, and we didn't get the results. We didn't score the goals we needed. They were able to capitalize and they won some games. I don't think we necessarily played poorly, but there was definitely some games where we're, you know, trying to get back on track on what makes us successful. And it always kind of tied back to defense and doing the right things defensively. So I think that's been better. And, you know, our goaltenders have played pretty well as of late. Jonathan's been really good in the last 5 games, even his loss in LA that he had when he went back for his homecoming. I think it was 2-1, but he played fantastic. And he's won games since then. And then, Igor coming off the All-Star break has been really good. We won in Chicago, and then he had a shutout last game he played. So the goaltending's been better. We've been scoring some goals, and you know, it just, if we can tighten it up defensively, I feel like we can win some hockey games.
You coached against pretty much the same Ranger team a lot. I'm curious, as a coach, you know, you kind of think you know what a team is, and then you come in and you get behind closed doors. What surprised you about this team?
There's a real high skill level here. I mean, there's some really skilled players. Like, you get to see, you know, a guy like Mika from the other bench, and you respect his skill, and then you get to see it on a daily basis in practice and in games, and you realize really how talented he is, what a really good two-way centerman he is with a high skill level. And then there's others too. I mean, Artemi's the same way. You know, you see him, you know he's dangerous, but then when you see what he does on a daily basis, and then you could keep going Trocheck for what he does, Kreider and his ability to score goals and his ability to create on the power play and score goals on the power play, and Adam Fox, you get to see his mind work, and you get to see him really be patient with the game and push others back with his patience. He's got such a high threshold with regard to that. Sorry, I guess he's got such a high threshold with regard to that. It's amazing to see what he's able to do. And so there's just a really good skill level here. And I think you appreciate that when you work with guys on a daily basis.
You know, in terms of, you mentioned it, right? The goalies, Jonathan Quick has been fantastic this season. Maybe giving you more than you even thought you would get, you know, from him. Igor Shesterkin has, you know, he played a really strong game the other night. He played a good game in Chicago. He's had his ups and downs, but he's, you know, the pedigree. You know what's there. You worked with a really good goalie in Nashville, too, in Pekka Rinne, like maybe a potential Hall of Fame goalie in Pekka. Are there comparables, maybe not in the way they play, but just the mindset that they have, the attitude, the competitiveness between the two of them?
I definitely think that there's a, I think when you're at a high level like that, there's a, there's gears in your head that, that always are driving you to be great. And I think there's definitely comparisons when it comes to the compete, the practice quality, the practice level. It doesn't stop. That's not something, I don't think that's something that you turn on and off. I think you become who you are because of the habits that you have. And you talk about a guy like Pekka, he had those habits on a daily basis. You watch Jonathan, who's done so much in his career, you know, at a different point than in his career than Igor is, and yet they work equally as hard in practice all the time. They never, they don't really take optionals. They don't come off the ice. They don't quit on drills or quit on, you know, like a puck comes in, practice drill, they stay on it. They finish it, and then they take on the next one as it comes in. And so their habits to get them to where they are and where they why they've been who they've been, I think are outstanding. So I think those qualities and those traits are similar.
So I know you guys have another big game. We're taping this on Wednesday and you have Montreal, and then you can kind of turn your sights a little bit to the outdoor game. You know, I'm curious, whenever we talk to anybody that's playing in one of these games, what about this game and just being outdoors speaks to you as a former player and as somebody that grew up in a cold weather climate?
There's no question that this game is different. It's still worth the same 2 points. You know, that's the, there's no extra value to it from the columns, and it's a win or a loss. It's worth 2 points or none or maybe one. So that, with that regard, everything's the same. But I will tell you that in my experience in the outdoor games, the atmosphere of being outside, the rink being in the center of a football stadium or a baseball stadium with that many people, it's markedly different from a regular game inside. And I think our game's awesome. I mean, you know, you put a rink in front of 18,000 people, like 20,000, 19,000, whatever it is, the way we do things now, it's amazing. The fans in the NHL are amazing. And the way they present the game and they put the game on, I think it's incredible the way it's delivered through the airways and brought to the people. If you're not at the game, like, I think our game is just awesome. But when you go to the outdoor game, it is a different level of being awesome. And everyone that I've been to, it's just the day kind of takes over, and it certainly feels like it should be worth more than the 2 points, because the atmosphere of the fans and the buildup and the hype and the amount of fans, the way it's presented, I think it's a really good day for hockey, because it's presented in such a positive way. The game's brought to a bunch of people live, and I think it's even brought to a lot more people as it's televised.
So I got to bring this up. You've coached in four.
What do you got to bring this? What do you have to bring this up?
I got to bring it up for? You haven't won any of them yet. So I got to say, how badly do you need a win in this one, or want a win in this one? I mean, and all joking aside, like, these experiences, win or lose, you get the amazing experience. But I have heard, you know, from a lot of people that when you win it, it's just that, obviously, it's that much sweeter because you get a win. But, you know, you haven't experienced that yet. So is that in your mind right now? Or did I just put it in your mind?
Not really. I mean, I obviously know, you know, I know what's going on in my career. And it's certainly, I would like more than for me to check that box. I would like our team to be successful, because it is a win. We want to keep moving through the month of February the right way. We want to keep climbing the standings. We want to have success for the day, for the game, for our fan base. And I think that really trumps everything. Does it check that box for me too? I guess so, but that's not my hope or my priority. My priority is for our guys to go out and play well and try to do the right things and win a hockey game, because it is a, like I said, it's a different day. It really is. Like, you know, we were in the one in Carolina last year, and it was fantastic. Like they did a great job of putting that game on, and it was the night, it was the lights, it was the atmosphere, and everything was awesome. So I wasn't, to answer your question, I wasn't disappointed because I didn't get to win a. It
Right.
wasn't like that. I was disappointed because we didn't, I don't think that our team got what we wanted out of the day, which is to be successful. And so that, that's more what it's really about.
As a follow to that, Peter, though, of the four you've coached in, you coached at Fenway Park, you coached at Citizens Bank Park, the Cotton Bowl with the Predators against Dallas, where there were pig races on the field, which was incredible. And obviously the one you mentioned in Raleigh. Do you have a favorite? Is there one that's more special to you personally of those four?
See, you're asking me to like pick my favorite kid right now, right? I got three of them, and you want me to go on record and pick my
That's
favorite,
my next question,
which I
Peter.
will, by the way, quickly, if you want, I can. They were all, I think that they were all incredible, right? And so I want to put that out there, how that all of them were positive, all of them were incredible. But if you're asking me the background on one of them, I was just hired in Philadelphia midway through the season. I was born and raised in Massachusetts. I was a Red Sox fan. I understand, kind of like the Madison Square Garden, I understand the history and what Fenway Park means, the Green Monster and all of that, and going to a game there. My dad's 80th birthday, we brought him and we sat on the Green Monster as a family. And that's all he wanted. He said, "Well, what do you want to do?" He says, "I'd like to go to a, I'd like to sit in the monster for my birthday at Fenway." And so we did it, and it was spectacular, by the way. If you ever get an opportunity to do that, do it. But the fact that I was hired, I don't know. You'd have to do the math on it, 2 weeks or 19 days or whatever before the Winter Classic, and it was in Fenway, and so I was got an opportunity to coached the Flyers and got an opportunity to be part of my first Winter Classic, and the fact that it was at Fenway, that one probably rings in a little bit more special just for some side details.
Coach, you've done both the Winter Classic and the Stadium Series, and they happen at different times of the year. This is generally a later game. I'm curious, does this do anything for a team this late in the year? It's always big events kind of bring teams together because you spend it with your families, the family skate. You get to see the lighter side of some people. You look back at Edmonton this year, and one of the things that they say turned their season around was seeing some of their broadcasters and stuff in the family skate, just kind of making fools out of themselves, almost enjoying themselves as kids. So I'm curious, this late in the year, when your team's already set, does this still have an impact on a team, do you think?
I think it has an impact on a team from a personal standpoint, like you're talking about. With regard to how it sets up the rest of the season, I think, you get asked this question a lot when you're going into a Christmas break or you post All-Star game or the start of a season. There's some teams that go one direction and there's some teams that go in a different direction. And it's probably, you can make the case for some coming out of an outdoor game, whether they've gone on a good run, or if coming out of the break has kind of stalled them, coming out of the game has stalled them a little bit. I think that the work's done on the ice. I think it is, to your point, I think it's a great day because it is a little bit more about family, and it is a little bit bigger. Like, you don't necessarily have people flying in to all your home games, but your family, your sisters, your nieces and nephews, and your grandparents, they might be coming into a game that's an outdoor game, and so that makes it a little bit more special as far as a team goes, where you get that the bump coming out of it. I'm not sure. I'm sure there are some bumps that come out of it where it's a real positive effect, and then maybe there's others where it slows the team down a little bit, and it's probably documented both ways, to be honest with you. But I do think it'll be a good day. I think families enjoy it. Like I said, even though it's the 2 points, it is marked. It's just got that feel to it, like it's bigger than that, like it's more than that. And so that's what makes it exciting and fun.
It's also Rangers Islanders, and last one from me, Peter. It's a Rangers Islanders game for you guys too, and there's a special feeling to that rivalry. You've been on both sides of it, obviously. Just from a New York perspective, understanding this game is in New Jersey in the shadows of Manhattan, what were your expectations coming to New York? You've coached here before. You've coached as a visitor here several times. What were your expectations, and how do they compare to the reality?
Yeah, the I don't know if it's fair to compare, coaching the Islanders and coaching the Rangers. I think that's two different areas. Like, I love my Islanders was my first job. It'll always hold a special place in my heart, and Mike Milbury gave me an unbelievable opportunity a long time ago, and I've been fortunate enough to stay in the game for a long time because of the opportunity he gave me, and I'll always be thankful for that. But that they're different. I lived in Huntington on Long Island, and here you're right next to Manhattan. You're down playing your games in New York City, and I've gotten a chance to coach in some unbelievable cities. They're all different. I could tell you great things about all of them, but there's something about New York City. There's something about Madison Square Garden. The fans, there's fans everywhere, but New York fans, I mean, they're gonna tell you how they were. You could have somebody that's my age coming up saying their grandfather took them to a game when they were 15, 10 years old, 12 years old. I get these stories all the time, and they've had these same seats for 40 years, the same season ticket holders, seats. They've never left their family. They're the biggest Ranger. I love that. I mean, they're committed, passionate about their team here in New York. I love the fact that it's New York City. It's one of the greatest cities in the world, and it's in downtown, inside of all the energy that's brought into New York City, the fan base, getting that opportunity to coach an Original Six. And so it is different, and there's a lot of reasons why I'm so thankful to be here and part of this team and organization. But I do love the feel of coaching the Rangers and Original Six at Madison Square Garden in front of one of the most, passionate fan bases that there is in sports.
Your last one for me, and I'll let you go. And it's more of a personal one. The games like this, they're kind of way stations in your career, right? You show up and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe this is happening to me. Do you take any time during these games to kind of reflect on your journey? I mean, to me, it's one of the most amazing journeys from Division III hockey to, playing in the NHL to playing in the Olympics to now coaching. Do you ever take a few moments to just kind of think about your journey and what's happened along the way?
I mean, I do think about it a little bit. More so just from a thankful standpoint. Like, I got an opportunity a long time ago to try out for an NHL team, and that next year I signed with the Rangers and became part of their organization, and I got the 12 games in the NHL that you're talking about. And if you had asked me, every kid dreams of being in the, winning a Stanley Cup or being in the National Hockey League, I guess in some profession or some sort of capacity. But then when you go to college and you graduate, you gotta find out what's real and what you're gonna do. And the fact that I'm gonna be turning 60 this year and I'm still here, I really can't believe that sometimes. Not so much the ride or the journey, like I still feel like I haven't really worked, even though there's a ton of work that's involved in coaching. I feel like I'm still playing a game. My dad got me into hockey when I was 4 years old, and so I've been on the ice and playing hockey since I'm four, and I don't move as well anymore out here. I might have moved better at four than I do at 60 or 59, but I think more than anything, more not a reflection type thing. I think more of a reflection would be, I can't believe I'm still here getting a coach in the National Hockey League. And so, for that, I always say, and I get asked these questions, just more grateful than anything else. So I've had a lot of support along the way, my wife, my kids, my family, and they've had a ride too. If you think about it, like, the ride has been crazy. We're going to an outdoor game, our be my fifth one. And the opportunities for them to be a part of that and take all that in, and plus the regular seasons and the playoffs, and just fortunate. So I look at it a little. I do sit. I do take a minute and a breath real quick, but not for the reason that you asked. More the reasons like, holy crap, man, I'm still here, still
Yeah,
here.
that's great, Peter. We're grateful you joined us. Really appreciate it. Great stuff. Good luck Thursday, obviously, and have a great time in the outdoor game. All right.
Yeah, I will, guys. Thanks for having me on.
great interview with Peter Laviolette, the Rangers coach. It's one of the most interesting men in hockey. I think his journey's been unbelievable, and this is just the latest chapter. We're going to be joined by another interesting person in a little while, and Andre Palat from the New Jersey Devils. Before we do that, though, I think we need to touch on maybe the biggest news of the week, and I'm not sure why it's the biggest news of the week, and I'm not even sure why it happened, but Morgan Riley suspended for 5 games, for his actions at the end of the Ottawa Senators game. Everybody, you know, has their opinions on what happened and who's at fault and what the suspension should be. You know, I'm curious, Dan, what your thoughts are on it.
You can't do what Morgan Riley did. You just can't do it. In today's game, with everything we know, with the way we have with player safety, you can't do it. You cannot lose your mind and go up to a guy, whether you like what he did or not, and raise your stick up and cross-check him directly in the head. Can't do it. There's no defense for it. There really isn't. You want to skate up to him, hit him into the boards because he did that? Send a message that way? Fine. Go up to him, drop your gloves right away and say, let's go? Okay. I got no problem with that. But it's not a part of hockey anymore. It's just not. It's a cross-check to the head, exacting revenge like that, is just not a part of the game. I don't know that it ever should have been part of the game, but maybe it was at one point. It's not anymore. You cannot do that. And he has to know better. And he cost his team. They were losing the game. He cost his team. I understand like the code of what Ridly Gregg did from the Ottawa Senators that was against it and all that. It doesn't bother me that much, to be honest with you. I can understand why it would bother me as an opponent. I mean, I've never been on the ice. I don't know what that feeling is like, right? So I cannot put myself in that position. But I know that when you do what Morgan Riley did, you have a price to pay. And he's paying the price in a 5-game suspension. You just can't do it anymore.
There's no place. I don't even understand where the anger is coming from. He scored into an empty net. Who cares? Yeah. Who cares that he slapped it into the empty net? I don't care if he falls down on his knees and snookers it into the net. A goal's a goal. Like, it's a rivalry game. You don't want that to happen to you. Don't be behind. Don't pull your goalie. You don't want to get scored on. You don't want to be embarrassed. Don't pull your goalie. Just lose the game. What does it matter if you lose the game 3-2 or 4-2? Like, why is there this feeling that hockey players are immune from normal human behavior?
I don't get it.
Said something to me after I filed my story about how bad it was, can I punch you in the face?
I would hope not. No, you cannot do that.
No, you're lucky I can't. Because that would be untoward.
I don't get it. And why is it different in this particular sport? I was watching, it was Anson Carter, and he brought this up, and it made a perfect sense. In basketball, the end of a game, a guy will go up and slam dunk, pump his fist, flex, hang on the rim. It's the exclamation point of a win, right? That happens at the end of games a lot. In football, last play, team's on a drive, whatever it might be, defense goes up, sacks the quarterback, the guy goes absolutely nuts, celebrates, dances around, right? All those things. If they score a touchdown, they have set poses. Why in hockey can't a guy come up and slap the puck into the net, yet it's against the code? I don't understand that. Like, we don't do anything in basketball. Nothing happens in basketball to the guy that slams the ball, the slam dunk at the end of the game. Nothing happens to the team or the player that celebrates a sack at the end of a football game when it's, you know, like the exclamation point. Why in hockey does the guy have to pay a price? I don't understand that, but it does. That's the way it is. So fine, pay the price. Okay. You don't pay the price by getting cross-checked to the head, unsuspectingly cross-checked to the head. Agree or disagree with what Ridly Gregg from the Ottawa Senators did? He did not deserve that.
No, of course not. And I don't disagree with it. I don't see an issue with it. I can score any way he wants. He could have done a Michigan if he had the time.
By the way, there was a video. I don't know. It might have been in the KHL. I'm not sure. It was a video out of a guy like put the puck on his stick blade, and then launched it like a javelin toward the goal. And if he did that, it would be on every highlight reel all over the United States and Canada and the world, and we'd probably be talking about it right now, being like, did you see that? That was amazing that he tried to score. Ridley Gregg comes up and he tries the hardest shot competition. He slaps the puck into the net. Exclamation point at the end of the win. And you know what? He's got to go get his head caved in by a cross check by Morgan Riley. No, I don't see it. I don't get it. It's the way the code, I guess, is what we call it, right? And it's always been part of the game, and that's how players are brought up. You're not supposed to get shown up like that. Well, maybe we should change that.
All I know, Dan, is every other code that we live by is a living document. It changes.
Yes.
There's amendments to the Constitution. The laws are repealed and added all the time. There is no absolute truth. Things change because we change. Our circumstances change. Technology changes. Whatever it might be, things change. The code needs to change.
Were you standing on a
soapbox? I feel like Rocky.
Yeah. Yeah. That, yeah, you know, if you can change and I can change and everybody can change, right? Yeah, I was wondering if you're standing on a soapbox at that time when you were just saying that, but you weren't.
I'm just
sitting
saying,
right there.
Every other rule book that we live by is a living document, but the code, yeah. The code is the same exact code it was in 1970 when there were bench clearing brawls.
Game's different. You can't do those things anymore. No question about it. And Morgan Riley pays the price for it, 5-game suspension. It could have been longer. They, you know, 5 games. I have no feel for the suspension. That's fine. 5 games, all good. To me, he just can't do that. He's paying the price for it. All right. We talked to Andre Palat from the New Jersey Devils. They're playing Saturday night against the Philadelphia Flyers at MetLife Stadium. They got a lot going on, the Devils. We touched on it before of some needs and the way they are right now. Here is our interview with Andre Palat. Andre, thanks so much for joining us. So you've been in one outdoor game. What was that experience like for you, and what are you looking forward to in this one? You played in Nashville with the Lightning.
Yeah, no, it was an awesome experience, a little fun, you know. I'm excited with the jersey to get going on Saturday against Philly. It'll be a little fun.
For you, what's the best part about playing outdoors?
I mean, just the atmosphere, probably, you know, playing in front of more people than usual, playing in just different lightning than normally. And it's a little bit like, you know, back in the day when we were, you know, playing hockey on the pond type of feeling, but obviously way better. And yeah, it's just a lot of stuff going on that day too. So everybody looking forward to it.
I wonder if you could take me into what it was like for you. What were you feeling? What were you thinking when it was time to go on the ice for the game in Nashville in the Stadium Series a couple of years ago? There's 68,000 people there. Now, you were the visiting team, not the home team. And this one, you'll be the home team. But just what was that walk like? What was the feeling like? Were you getting the tingles? What was that? Because this is not normal. I mean, 81 other times a year in the regular season, you skate, you know, you walk there out of the entrance, you jump on the ice, and here we go. But this is different. What were you feeling in that moment?
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, the walkway to the ice usually are pretty long. So you're just enjoying the atmosphere. Even we were a away team, there were so many Lightning fans, and the atmosphere was unbelievable. There was, you know, after anthem, fireworks, so stuff like that makes it special, and you're just enjoying the moment and getting excited for the game.
I don't want you to give away any state secrets now, but the big tradition for the last few years, and you did it when you were in Nashville, is team outfits for these outdoor games. Everything's about jersey. You guys have your outfit picked out yet as a team to come into the stadium?
Yeah, all good. All picked up. We're ready to roll.
But you won't tell us, I'm assuming, right?
This I guess. No.
You can't tell us. All right, so we'll look forward to it, definitely. Have you been to MetLife Stadium before? Have you seen it?
I actually haven't. Yeah, I always had a plan to go to see the Jets, but I didn't make it this year yet.
Now, why would you go see the Jets? I'm a Giants fan. Now, why would you go see
the Jets? I would see the Giants too.
Okay, just, good.
I'm actually more fan to the Giants because where I live, there's so many Jets fans. So I'm, but in my head, that's the first thing I popped up in my head. But I'm still a Bucks fan too. So
Never go see the Jets. Let me ask you this. I mean, this is an outdoor game and it takes up so much of your time and so much of your energy, but it comes so late in the year and the points that are out there are so important, especially against Philly, who's 6 points ahead of you. The Rangers and the Islanders play the next day and they're right in that mix. Like how much is it a case of embracing the day as well as understanding what the stakes are?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge, you know. We are, like you said, in a part of the season when, you know, every point matters and we are chasing it right now, the points to get in the playoffs. So, yeah, I think everybody knows what we have to do. We have to enjoy that day, but also, you know, it's a business. We have to go there and then play a tough game against Philly, which and Philly's playing great this season. So it's going to be tough. But like I said, we have to enjoy it, but also be ready for the game.
You know, you played in one of these games before, a stadium series game, and I'm curious. Sean asked this question. We had Peter Laviolette from the Rangers on earlier, and he asked him, you know, it's later in the season, do you get a bump, you know, from winning a game, or can this be you know, something this late in the season, the diversion be good, you know, something different? Your experience, I mean, did you feel there was a bump after playing in that game and, you know, not just playing in that game, but winning that game in Nashville? And, you know, just do you think it could have an impact on your group to have this come at this time of the year as opposed to, you know, say when the Winter Classic comes on January 1st or, you know, other times of the year, you know, where you get, you know, different things that pop up in the schedule than the normal?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's a different kind of game. It's outdoor, you know, we can have a lot of fun with the guys, with the outfits, and, you know, just our family could be there. So, yeah, I mean, if we going to win that game, we definitely can gain some momentum from it and you know, play better and win more games down the stretch.
Andre, everybody knows that Jack Hughes is a good player. I mean, he's shown it over and over again. The numbers speak to themselves. But I think it goes beyond numbers, and I'm curious. He's been back for a few games now. How does he make your team different?
I mean, yeah, he's a superstar in his league, and you could see it. You know, he was out for a while, and we didn't do that good, you know. And then he's on the ice, and he can do from small little things something special. You know, when he has the puck on the stick, it's pretty fun to watch and be right there on the bench. So yeah, I'm super, super lucky that I'm in the team with him and I can see what he can do.
Is he kind of like Kucherov too, with what he does with the puck?
I think so. Kuch's, they're different players, obviously. But yeah, you can just see the talents, how they see the ice. You know, they know where the puck is gonna be. They see the path. It's couple plays ahead, like the best guys can do. So it's pretty special. I you know, I could play with Gooch and now with Jack. So it's amazing.
When you think about the outdoor game, and there was a little of this, I think, in Nashville, but I know you said you haven't been to a football game yet, but I'm sure you've heard when the buses come in, you come in through the parking lot and, you know, the lots are going to open at 2 o'clock. It's going to be a football type atmosphere with the tailgates and everything else. Like, are you able to just kind of take all that stuff in as it leads up to the game?
I think so. That's what I remember from the Nashville game. You know, you walk out from the bus and there's so many people, so I expecting to be maybe way better because we're the home team, you know, and the fans will be hopefully, like you said, tailgating and you know, partying there. So it's gonna be one of the highlights for sure to get it out of the bus and, you know, go through those fans and see them, how excited they are.
How have you ever been to a tailgate?
I did a couple times in Tampa at the Bucks Stadium. It was pretty fun. Yeah, it was awesome.
You should get off the bus and go to a tailgate when you get there. Hang out.
I wish I could. Hopefully we can you know, win the game and have some fun with the guys after.
There you go. Big picture for your team. Listen, I mean, couple of wins here in a row, two in a row. Jack's back. We were just talking about that. Defensively, it's been good. 4 goals against in the past 3 games, 3-1-1 in the past 5. Big picture, how's this team feeling? What are you guys thinking right now?
I think we're feeling pretty good. You know, like you said, last three games, I think that's exactly how we should play. Even we lost OT in Carolina. I thought it was one of the better games. Obviously, last two games were good too. You know, back to back, we won both games. And yeah, it's we just playing good defense, good structure. Goaltending been great. So we just need to keep going and understand that the defense gonna to win us games.
When you look at the standings and you see how tight they are, and you realize that maybe you can't make up a lot of ground, but you need to make up enough to get in the playoffs, does it enter into the equation that this is what Florida did last year, that they got in as the 8 seed and then they went on a run and they ended up 2 games from the Stanley Cup? I mean, do players accept now that seeding doesn't matter as much as maybe it once did?
Of course, like yeah, I mean any game you can win, get the points, it's a good thing, and we just need to get into in the playoffs. You know, that's one of the message we had before the season. Doesn't matter how, if you're first or last to get in, you just need to get in, and you know, in the playoffs, you never know what's gonna happen.
Fans look at the standings all the time. When do you start looking at the standings? Have you started already?
I mean, yeah, you as a player, you always know where your team's at, but now it's getting a little bit more and more. You can see the scores, you can see the teams from your division, how they doing. So yeah, I mean, it's getting pretty, or it is tight all season, but it's gonna be crazy race to get into it and until the end of the season.
I got to ask you about one of your countrymen, maybe your hero, I don't know. Jaromír Jágr's getting his number retired in Pittsburgh on over the weekend on Sunday, the day after you guys play at the Stadium Series. I'm curious, do you have any good Jaromír Jágr stories?
Not really. I mean, it just the way I grew up, you know, he was the rock star in Czech, the best player ever. So I was growing up to watching the VHS with his old highlight goals in Pittsburgh. And yeah, just he was my, you know, favorite player. And then I got lucky to play with him in Sochi and Olympics. So it was pretty special for me to, you know, and I couldn't even, you know, talk to him, or I don't know what to say, and it was just weird. But he was always so nice, always joking around. So yeah, it was just the highlight of my career probably to play with and another like a lot of special players, Czech players, in Sochi.
Sounds good. Andre, we really appreciate this and enjoy it, right? Saturday night can't come soon enough. Enjoy it. Enjoy the experience. And maybe you guys do get a little tailgate at the end of it for
Yes,
yourselves.
hope so. Thanks for
They'll
having me,
still
guys.
be going on, trust me.
All right. I hope so. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks to Andre Palat for joining us right now. Look, the New Jersey Devils, Sean, they're right in the thick of the playoff race, you know, in the Eastern Conference. They've won a couple in a row now. They're 2 points back as we talk right now on Wednesday of the Detroit Red Wings for the second wild card. They're 6 points back of the Flyers, who they will play Saturday night at MetLife. And look, the Flyers have won 4 games in a row, and they are making things very interesting. There's no question about it. But you see the depth, right, of that playoff race in the East. There, to me, Sean, and you tell me if you disagree, there is no dominant team. The Bruins have been terrific all season, but I wouldn't call them dominant. The Florida Panthers have been very good, and they continue to get it done, and they're defensively have been just outstanding. The Rangers have won 5 in a row, but there is no dominant team, yet there's depth in the East, in my mind. The West has a couple of dominant teams, but not nearly the depth. So you look at the Western Conference playoff race now, Sean. Who are the wild card teams? You got the Kings, the Blues, the Predators, and even the Calgary Flames right in that mix. 3 points separates them. The Kraken, 4 points, you know, back of a wild card spot. The Minnesota Wild, 5 points back of a wild card spot. Even the Coyotes, they're only 8 points back. It's a muddled little race there for the wild card, and there's some sellers in there. We talked about the Flames already as a seller. Like, who are the wild card teams in the West?
I don't know. I mean, the Blues have kind of surprised me in that they've climbed back. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. They're still a minus team for goals, and that makes me nervous. But they look a little bit like the team that went deep in 2019, right, where they're going to sneak in at the end under a new coach. You know, if Binnington gets hot or stays hot, and some of the players that they have there, they could certainly make some noise. I don't know if they're good enough for the top end of that West, like you talked about. And then after that, like, the Kings do nothing for me. They're in the 1 seed right now, but I don't foresee them staying there in the way they're playing right now. So somebody's going to have to take it, and it might almost be by default. But with the way that the West is separating itself, you know, there's obviously a concern that it's going to be cannon fodder.
Right, and that's the thing. Like, if you're the Calgary Flames, we talked about them earlier. Like, I don't think you can be fooled by it, because I don't think you're good enough to beat any of the top teams, you know, in the Western Conference. Vancouver, Vegas, Edmonton, Dallas, Colorado, Winnipeg. Those are the top six, and it's a clear difference between the top six there and the rest in the West. And you've got these guys, like, you can't keep Tanev if you can get a first-round pick for him. You can't keep Hanifin if he's not going to sign the eight-year deal just to try to get in and lose, you know, as Daryl Sutter once said, be out in 8 days, right? So it's interesting. The Blues, to me, may have some staying power. We'll see. The Predators, who I know you like a lot, you rank them every week in the Super 16. Even now, the Predators, just 3-6-1 in their last 10. Like, the Andrew Burnett was on with Darren Millard on the Chirp podcast. What are they? Like, I just, like, they're so inconsistent. There's so many inconsistencies with that at the bottom of there. I don't have a firm prediction right now of who's going to get it. I'll say the Blues. The other team, I don't know. We've seen the Kraken get hot this season, right? They're not right now, but we've seen them get hot and reel it off, a 10-game streak that might be enough if they can do it again to get them in. I don't know. I know it's really deep in the East without a true dominant team, because even Boston, who has been very good, they have some holes that I'm sure that they would like to fill if they possibly could. It's just not – I don't see it in the West. It's really a muddled situation there. But then you look at the other parts of it, Sean, right? Those matchups in the playoffs, Vegas-Edmonton is set up right now. That's a great first-round matchup. Whoever it is, Dallas, Colorado, Winnipeg, two of those teams are going to play each other. That's a great first-round matchup. So that's where the eyeballs are going to go.
Yeah, and those teams are trying to get better, right? Like, it's not like they're sitting pat. Like, Vancouver just, you know, offered Phil Kessel a tryout. He's going to skate in the AHL this week, and then they're going to revisit it. Like, Vancouver's already made a ton of moves and to try and get better, and they're still looking to add, right? And there's a lot of familiarity there. Tockett is familiar with them. There's players on the team that are familiar with them. Clearly, Jimmy Rutherford's familiar with them. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But none of these teams, as they look and they see what's around them, feel confident with what they have, as good as they've been, because they know it's just going to be a meat grinder.
Yeah, the Kessel thing is really interesting, right? Because you brought up the familiarity there. Beloved teammate. Everywhere he goes, the guys just love him. He would be a depth add, you know, a throw-in, you know, put him in if you have injury situations. You know what you're going to get out of him, especially a guy like Tockett who's coached him. And if you're Vancouver, you made your big trade, right? Like, that was you made it. You got Lindholm. That was your guy. And you probably traded your most tradable asset, Kuzmenko, in that trade with Calgary to get him. And your first-round pick. They don't have a first-round pick, the Canucks. They don't have a second-round pick. And the other thing about it is, our Super 16 this week will indicate, it comes out Thursday, the Vancouver Canucks have 9 players who are pending unrestricted free agents right now. So they can't really look to trade a top prospect to get another guy back, because they're going to have to do some work at the end of this season. They're not going to bring all 9 back. Maybe a couple of them come back, but there's going to be some retooling, and they may need some of their top guys who are in the AHL right now to graduate to the NHL level next season to fill some of these spots that are going to be open, but they're in it to win it right now. So Kessel, all it does is cost you a couple of bucks, right? It doesn't cost you anything. See what you got. I think it makes a lot of sense for Vancouver to do. And it's looking, you know, you look like the rich just get a little bit richer if they're able to do it without giving up anything. And I like the idea. And if it doesn't work out, well, no harm, no foul.
Yeah, and look, I mean, Kessel trusts Tockett, and Tockett was a bit of a Kessel whisperer, right? Like, he was able to get to him and explain what the situation was late in his career in Pittsburgh as his fortunes changed, and kind of kept him in the here and now. So there's certainly a relationship there, and there would be an ability to explain what the situation is going to be and how he's going to be deployed and all the things that go with that. Speaking of Pittsburgh, before before we go, there's another thing that we need to touch on. It's happening the same day as that Sunday game between the Islanders and the Rangers, where all the eyes seem to be focused. But Jaromir Jagr landed back in Pittsburgh today. He's going to get his number retired. There was a thought for a while that this might not happen. There was a thought by Jagr that it might not happen because of the way that things ended there and how he went on in his career. But everybody's back together in Pittsburgh, and it's going to be an amazing night. So many great memories. Tom Galitti from our staff is going to be there. Wes Crosby, our Pittsburgh correspondent, has done a great job kind of leading up to it. But I'm really excited to see Jaromir Jagr back in Pittsburgh. He's iconic there. His number belongs in the rafters, and he's, you know, one of the three greatest players that's ever played for the Penguins now. Maybe four. Who knows by the time it's all done.
Yeah, well, you could say four if you want. You know, you could throw Evgeny Malkin into that mix too, with Crosby and Mario Lemieux, and obviously Jagr. And he a huge part of those teams in the early 90s, and time heals wounds, right? Time heals. And that's what's happened here. Enough time has passed. Generations have moved on. Different ownership groups and everything like that. So it's good. It's really good to see Jagr back in Pittsburgh, to have his number 68 go up. And it should. It's where it belongs. I think it'll be a great night in Pittsburgh. I can't wait to hear what Jagr has to say. He's always a character. We know that. A couple other things too, Sean. Alex Ovechkin's got goals in six straight games. He's up to 14 goals now. So all of a sudden, Ovi's hot in the back, and we can get back to talking about the chase for Gretzky's record. He's 58 goals behind him now. Think Ovechkin can get to 25 goals this season? He's only got 14 now.
I don't. Like, I think this is like the one hot streak, right, that I think everybody kind of has in their season. You look at other players that have done it. Like, I haven't seen that consistency from Alex. And, you know, I don't know where Washington's going to be. They're kind of one of those teams that's in that mushy middle, and you don't know whether they're going up or down. I do like the way that he's playing. You know, there's an excitement back in his game. There's a huge smile in his game. They scored a goal last night, and he was sitting on the edge of the runner of the bench and just, you know, completely lit up, excited about what was happening. And you know, so I think that's great. I'm curious what he can do. And none of his goals, he hasn't done much on the power play. The Caps haven't done much on the power play. They have the second worst power play in the league, if I'm not mistaken, with the best power play player ever.
Yeah, and listen, this is part of a bigger conversation too that, you know, we should have one day, maybe not right now at the end of this episode, but Evgeny Malkin was talking earlier this week about how the game is different for him. Our Wes Crosby wrote about that, and, you know, he can't do the same things he was doing anymore. He has to adjust. He has to be smarter. He's not scoring. Alex Ovechkin is having one of those seasons, right? Is it down season? Is this the tail of it, right, for Ovechkin? Or does he have to adjust the way he trains? Does Malkin have to adjust the way they train in order to be impact players in their late 30s, right, which is where they are right now? I think they do. You know, Ovechkin, this is a lesson season if he wants to continue on and chase this record. It's a lesson season of what he needs to do in order to get back. But a hot streak is a hot streak, and he's got goals in six straight. And if he continues to just stay hot for a little bit longer, it's going to look a little bit better for him. But the Malkin stuff I thought was obviously really interesting too. And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the Penguins. You know, another reason why I think that the Pittsburgh Penguins should be in the market to sell this season. Just, you know, Malkin doesn't have it either.
No, he struggled, and he's upset, and, you know, hopefully he figures it out down the stretch. I think, you know, he's a really proud player. You've seen that in the past when, you know, he's felt he's been snubbed for certain things. And, you know, he kind of uses that frustration and that pride to fuel his game. And so, you know, maybe he's at the bottom now, and you're going to see a different Malkin for the last quarter of the season. I don't think those guys can comprehend missing the playoffs 2 years in a row. And I think you're going to see each of the core guys, right, and Letang, Crosby, and Malkin make a huge push here down the stretch.
And we'll see if Ovechkin can do the same with Washington. Anyway, we thank Peter Laviolette, Sean. He was terrific. Andre Palat as well from the New Jersey Devils. Can't wait to take it outside this weekend, Sean. Saturday, Sunday. Should be a lot of fun.
It's going to be awesome. I can't wait.
Until then, and even then, enjoy the hockey.